Chapter 35. Favor the old emotion. She was using all her strength to thrust down. 8. The TENTH of September, the Sunday was the 13th after Trinity, and the afternoon service at Carriford was nearly over. The people were singing the evening hymn. Manston was at church as usual in his accustomed place, two seats forward from the large square pew occupied by Miss Aldcliffe and Cytherea. The ordinary sadness of an autumnal evening service seemed, in Cytherea's eyes, to be doubled on this particular occasion. She looked at all the people as they stood and sang, waving backwards and forwards like a forest of pines swayed by a gentle breeze, then at the village children singing too, their heads inclined to one side, their eyes listlessly tracing some crack in the old walls, or following the movement of a distant bowerbird with features petrified almost to painfulness. Then she looked at Manston. He was already regarding her with some purpose in his glance. "It is coming this evening," apostrophe she said in her mind. A minute later, at the end of the hymn, when the congregation began to move out, Manston came down the aisle. He was opposite the end of her seat as she stepped from it, the remainder of their progress to the door, being in contact with each other. Miss Aldcliffe had lingered behind. "Don't let's hurry," apostrophe he said, when Cytherea was about to enter the private path to the house as usual. "Would you mind turning down this way for a minute till Miss Aldcliffe has passed?" She could not very well refuse now. They turned into a secluded path on their left, leading round through a thicket of laurels to the other gate of the churchyard, walking very slowly. By the time the further gate was reached, the church was closed. They met the sexton with the keys in his hand. "We are going inside for a minute," said Manston to him, taking the keys unceremoniously. "I will bring them to you when we return." The sexton nodded his assent, and Cytherea and Manston walked into the porch, and up the nave. They did not speak a word during their progress, or in any way interfere with the stillness and silence that prevailed everywhere around them. Everything in the place was the embodiment of decay. The fading red glare from the setting sun, which came in at the west window, emphasizing the end of the day and all its cheerful doings, the mildewed walls, the uneven paving stones, the wormy pews, the sense of recent occupation, and the dank air of death which had gathered with the evening, would have made grave a lighter mood than Cytherea's was then. "What sensations does the place impress you with?" She said at last, very sadly. "I feel imperatively called upon, to be honest, from very despair of achieving anything by stratagem in a world where the materials are such as these." He too spoke in a depressed voice, purposely or otherwise. "I feel as if I were almost ashamed to be seen walking such a world," she murmured. "That's the effect it has upon me. But it does not induce me to be honest particularly." He took her hand in both his, and looked down upon the lids of her eyes. "I pity you sometimes," he said more emphatically. "I am pitiable, perhaps. So are many people. Why do you pity me?" "I think that you make yourself needlessly sad." "Not needlessly." "Yes, needlessly. Why should you be separated from your brother so much, when you might have him to stay with you till he is well?" "That can't be," she said, turning away. He went on, "I think the real, and only good thing, that can be done for him is to get him away from Budmouth a while. And I have been wondering whether it could not be managed for him to come to my house, to live for a few weeks. Only a quarter of a mile from you. How pleasant it would be." "It would." He moved himself round immediately to the front of her, and held her hand more firmly, as he continued, "Cytherea, why do you say 't would,' so entirely in the tone of abstract supposition? I want him there. I want him to be my brother too. Then make him so, and be my wife. I cannot live without you. Oh, Cytherea. My darling, my love, come and be my wife. ... His face bent closer and closer to hers, and the last word sank to a whisper as weak as the emotion inspiring it was strong. She said firmly and distinctly, yes, I will. ... Next month? ... He said on the instant, before taking breath. No, not next month. ... The next? ... No. ... December? Christmas Day, say? ... I don't mind. ... Oh, you darling. ... He was about to imprint a kiss upon her pale, cold mouth, but as he hastily covered it with her hand. Don't kiss me at least where we are now. ... She whispered imploringly. Why? ... We are too near God. ... He gave a sudden start, and his face flushed. As he had spoken so emphatically, that the words near God echoed back again through the hollow building from the far end of the chancel. What a thing to say! ... He exclaimed. Surely a pure kiss is not inappropriate to the place. ... No, ... she replied, with a swelling heart. I don't know why I burst out, so I can't tell what has come over me. Will you forgive me? ... How shall I say S without judging you? How shall I say O without losing the pleasure of saying yes? ... He was himself again. I don't know, ... she absently murmured. I'll say S, ... he answered daintily. It is sweeter to fancy we are forgiven than to think we have not sinned, and you shall have the sweetness without the need. ... She did not reply, and they moved away. The church was nearly dark now, and melancholy in the extreme. She stood beside him, while he locked the door, then took the arm he gave her, and wound her way out of the churchyard with him. Then they walked to the house together, but the great matter having been set at rest, she persisted in talking only on indifferent subjects. Christmas Day, then, ... he said, as they were parting at the end of the shrubbery. I meant old Christmas Day, ... she said evasively. ... People do not usually attach that meaning to the words. ... No, but I should like it best, if it could not be till then. ... It seemed to be still her instinct, to delay the marriage to the utmost. Very well, love, ... he said gently. 'Tis a fortnight longer still, but never mind. Old Christmas Day. ... 9. The 11th of September, there. It will be on a Friday. ... She sat upon a little footstool gazing intently into the fire. It was the afternoon of the day following that of the steward's successful solicitation of her hand. I wonder if it would be proper in me to run across the park and tell him it is a Friday? ... She said to herself, rising to her feet, looking at her hat lying near, and then out of the window towards the old house. Proper or not, she felt that she must at all hazards remove the disagreeable, though, as she herself owned, unfounded impression the coincidence had occasioned. She left the house directly, and went to search for him. Manston was in the timber yard, looking at the sawyers as they worked. Cytherea came up to him hesitatingly. Till within a distance of a few yards as he had hurried forward with alacrity now that the practical expression of his face became visible she wished almost as he had never sought him on such an errand. In his business mood he was perhaps very stern. It will be on a Friday, ... she said confusedly, and without any preface. Come this way. ... said Manston, in the tone he used for workmen, not being able to alter at an instant's notice. He gave her his arm, and led her back into the avenue, by which time he was lover again. On a Friday, will it, dearest? You do not mind Fridays, surely? That's nonsense. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not seriously mind them, exactly, but if it could be any other day? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, let us say old Christmas Eve, then. Shall it be old Christmas Eve? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, old Christmas Eve. Apostrophe, apostrophe, your word is solemn and irrevocable now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly, I have solemnly pledged my word. I should not have promised to marry you if I had not meant it. Don't think I should. Apostrophe, she spoke the words with a dignified impressiveness. You must not be vexed at my remark, dearest. Can you think the worse of an ardent man, Cytherea, for showing some anxiety in love? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she could not say more. She was always ill at ease when he spoke of himself as a piece of human nature in that analytical way, and wanted to be out of his presence. The time of day, and the proximity of the house, afforded her a means of escape. I must be with Miss Aldcliffe now, will you excuse my hasty coming and going? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said prettily. Before he had replied as he had parted from him. Cytherea, was it Mr. Manston I saw you scudding away from in the avenue just now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Aldcliffe, when Cytherea joined her. Yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. Come, why don't you say more than that? I hate those taciturnnesses of yours. I tell you everything, and yet you are as close as wax with me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I parted from him, because I wanted to come in. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what a novel and important announcement. Well, is the day fixed? Apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Aldcliffe's face kindled into intense interest at once. Is it indeed? When is it to be? Apostrophe, on old Christmas Eve. Apostrophe, apostrophe, old Christmas Eve. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Aldcliffe drew Cytherea around to her front, and took a hand in each of her own. And then you will be a bride. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said slowly, looking with critical thoughtfulness upon the maiden's delicately rounded cheeks. The normal area of the color upon each of them decreased perceptibly after that slow and emphatic utterance by the elder lady. Miss Aldcliffe continued impressively, you did not say LD Christmas Eve as a fiancé should have said the words. And you don't receive my remark with the warm excitement that foreshadows a bright future. How many weeks are there to the time? Apostrophe, I have not reckoned them. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not? Fancy a girl not counting the weeks. I find I must take the lead in this matter. You are so childish, or frightened, or stupid, or something, about it. Bring me my diary, and we will count them at once. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Cytherea silently fetched the book. Miss Aldcliffe opened the diary at the page containing the almanac, and counted 16 weeks, which brought her to the 31st of December, a Sunday. Cytherea stood by, looking on as if he had no appetite for the scene. 16 to the 31st. Then let me see, Monday will be the 1st of January, Tuesday the 2nd, Wednesday 3rd, Thursday 4th, Friday 5th. You have chosen a Friday, as I declare. Apostrophe, apostrophe, a Thursday, surely? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Cytherea. No. Old Christmas Day comes on a Saturday. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the perturbed little brain had reckoned wrong. Well, it must be a Friday, apostrophe, she murmured in a reverie. No. Have it altered, of course, apostrophe, said Miss Aldcliffe cheerfully. There's nothing bad in Friday, but such a creature as you will be thinking about its being unlucky. In fact, I wouldn't choose a Friday myself to be married on, since all the other days are equally available. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I shall not have it altered, apostrophe, said Cytherea firmly. It has been altered once already. I shall let it be. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Z. The events of one day, one. The 5th of January. Before dawn, we pass over the intervening weeks. The time of the story is thus advanced more than a quarter of a year. on the midnight preceding the morning which would make her the wife of a man whose presence fascinated her into involuntariness of bearing, and whom in absence she almost dreaded, Cytherea lay in her Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.